Welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast with Scott McKenzie. Scott is a passionate industry professional dedicated to transferring cutting-edge, industry-focused innovations and trends while highlighting the men and women who keep the world moving. So put on your hard hat, grab your work boots, and let's go.
All right, welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast, the number one industrial and manufacturing podcast in the universe that celebrates you. The women and men of industry, the women and men of manufacturing. You are bold, you are brave, you dare greatly, and boy, do you innovate, and you're changing my life and lives around the world. That's why we celebrate you. You are incredible people. Thank you for what you do. That's why this particular podcast is here. It is all about you. All right, we've got a lengthy interview today. It is with a gentleman, Biden. Don't be concerned about that. Just ask me, you know. His name is Rob Tiffany, right? Rob Tiffany is the VP and head of IoT strategies at Ericsson. And this is a subject that I just absolutely love. One, how do you take all the technology that we've been talking on the Industrial Talk Podcast and truly change the world and change lives around the world? We're going to be talking about that with Rob. It is hard to take such an incredible topic like that and just distill it down into 30 minutes. Rob is passionate. He's got an organization out there called the Moab Foundation. And one of the reasons why we connected was I've had a ton of hours interviewing the best within IoT, the best within IIoT, the best within AI, digitization, Industry 4.0, from around the world. And I want to know how this technology will transform lives, not just here stateside, not just in other countries, but really countries and communities that really need it. And that's what the Moab Foundation is all about. And here's Rob. He's passionate about coding, and he is providing all of this stuff free, this IoT stuff for free, and is applying it to the sustainable development goals that are outlined within the UN. It's like no poverty, better water. There's 16 of these things. Education, and that's what I'm all about. I'm all about the at the Industrial Academy. Education, all of this stuff is so important to pull together so that we can truly transform the lives, transform communities, transform the people within these communities. It is a wonderful time. We just need to do it. Rob is passionate about it, and the people at Ericsson are passionate, and it has been just an absolute incredible honor to be able to interview this gentleman. So his organization is the Moab Foundation. We talk about that, but we talk about a lot of other things. We talk about incrementalism when it comes to deploying IoT. Let's get victories. Things like that, that are just real sound, sage advice on how to deploy technology that really will transform the lives of individuals and communities. It's powerful. We could do that. Yes, it is lengthy, but the guy he's a stinking IoT spark plug. He is. We hashtag that, by the way. Just FYI, hashtag it. Anyway, let's get on with the interview. Once again, Rob Tiffany, go out to his stat card out on LinkedIn. It's impressive. So put in Ericsson, you know, Rob Tiffany, Ericsson, boom, you'll find him. And you will not, and I mean, you will not be disappointed reaching out to this gent. He's fantastic. So, Rob Tiffany, Ericsson, we talk about the Moab Foundation big time on how we take technology and we really transform people and communities. It's an exciting time. So enjoy. Rob, welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast. Absolute honor that you have joined the number one industrial-related podcast in the universe. It is the universe. It's bigger than the galaxy, just FYI.
Thanks so much for having me.
I've been looking forward to this conversation in a big way, listeners out there. We've been having a great conversation prior to this particular podcast, and he's a spark plug, an IoT spark plug. You can use that on your bumper sticker. You want that bumper sticker? I'll send it to you.
I need that bumper sticker. Can I trademark that?
Is absolutely.
That
my new you go right ahead. Roll with it. Okay. Hashtag the hell out of it. Go right ahead, man. I'm an IoT.
Absolutely.
If you're out there audio on video, we just did the hashtag. Hashtag.
Sparkplug. Sparkplug of IoT. Exactly. Right.
Hey, okay, for the listeners out there, let's level set a little bit. Your stat card's pretty impressive out on LinkedIn. Big time.
Woo!
You definitely are smarter than I am. No. Based off of this stat card. Oh, based off of your stat card, you're brilliant.
I'm not smart. I'm just a grinder.
You know, it's true. There's a lot of benefits with grinding. For the listeners, give us a little background where you come from and why you're such a grinder.
Yes. So, I'm a VP and I'm head of our IoT data strategy at Ericsson. Ericsson makes that fun cellular technology that lets you do smartphones and all that. And I also, on nights and weekends, I have a nonprofit charity where I apply IoT to, you know, try to help the world, help solve some of our, you know, societal environmental issues. And it's called the Moab Foundation. And so that's a combination of technology and applying use cases to certain societal problems.
I like that because I've had hours and hours of conversation that is specific to, you know, industry 4.0, digitization, you know, whatever, all of that stuff. And that's great. And I'm not poo-pooing it by any stretch of the imagination. I want to know how it can be applied around the world in areas of the world that it could probably benefit. Now, you said Moab Foundation. Yeah. Whoa, were you just sitting down one day and just said, I want Moab? It's not the mother of all bombs.
No, it's not. Even though I was on a nuclear submarine with big bombs on it, missiles, it's not that. If anybody ever, you know, in the U.S., if you like to go to any national parks or go hiking places, if you happen to find yourself in Utah, there is a town called Moab. And right around that is the Canyonlands and Arches National Parks. You may have seen pictures of that giant arch in Utah. It's called the Delicate Arch, and some others with sun shining through it. Anyway, just I love getting out in nature. It's just beautiful. And I was doing a startup, actually. I was building an IoT platform myself. I type code. And I actually called, the company is called Enterprise IoT, but the platform itself, I just called it the Moab platform. And so that's where that came from.
Well, it's a great story. I like it a lot. Yeah. Beautiful country. Yeah. Absolutely. So let's dive in a little bit about what Moab. Now, it's a brainchild of definitely you, because I, fortunately for me, I've done hundreds of podcasts. And I want to know how this digitization, IoT, Industry 4.0 is going to help other people around the world. How come you thought about
that? Right. Well, you know, I've been in the space for a long time. I got it, you know, once I got out of the Navy, I was at a startup back in the 90s. It was like remotely monitoring vending machines over primitive wireless, early cellular. And we were building firmware, black boxes, putting in vending machines, and it was really hard. And that's kind of where I got started in the space that we now call IoT. And, you know, it's funny because when I did that, you know, I'm a kid and I'm learning from all these old guys and they taught me everything I know. And I always reflect on that time as this is as hard as it's ever going to be to make this IoT thing work. We had to invent everything from scratch. We had RF engineers building our own modems and creating our own packets bouncing off of towers. And I've been up, watched that evolution, and I think of IoT today, and it just seems really simple to me. I joke and say it's like the end of the Matrix when Neo can see the green ones and zeros instead of the people. It's just like, it's just no biggie anymore because you've been through it so long and you saw how hard it could be. And comparatively, it's a piece of cake. Now, obviously, lots of people are new to it, and it doesn't seem like a piece of cake to them. But it's all perspective, right? you've been somewhere where it was hard, you know, perspective in life. I used to keep my submarine at launch depth to do launching ICBMs. It makes business stress comparatively not a big deal.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
I'm just telling you, that's a badass statement being at launch depth. You're the first person. You're a first of a lot of things, man, quite frankly. I'm stumbling across this conversation because it's like, that's cool. I've never heard anybody talk about that launch depth. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. How often do you get that? You know what? IoT is really simple and people shouldn't overthink it. I've got something over here, a machine, an environmental sensor, a whatever, and it's just talking to me now. And where I normally would have to go visit that thing, a machine in a factory, I'm walking through the engine room of my submarine, whatever it is, and I've got a clipboard and I'm taking readings. I'm looking at a gauge showing me PSI. I'm looking at values numbers and I'm writing it down. And then I go back and I enter it into system. IoT using the magic of wireless, like connectivity or something, and compute on that thing to just, you tell me what it's
seeing you. Yeah, see, that's interesting because the reality is, Rob, once again, there's a lot of people that are talking about IoT, IIoT, digitization, and really all you're just saying is that there's an asset out there that has a language and it's communicating that language and you're just translating that language into something that could be tactically looked at, whatever it might be. You define
yes.
it and that's it.
That's it.
Let me ask you this one. Yeah.
And now it's over here.
Yeah. Let me ask you this question about, let's say we want to apply this technology to other parts of the country.
Yeah,
the other parts of the world, and we're pretty lucky here in the United States and other countries. We have a pretty robust infrastructure. What about countries that don't? How does this technology translate to that area?
No, that's a good point. Because you're right. When you want to do those kind of things, because it's like a baseline. What do I need to do anything that sounds techy or electronic? Well, I need electricity. And then above that, I need some kind of connectivity,
yeah.
Probably wired under the ground, like you fiber optics or networks. And then popping up, you see little wireless access points like Wi-Fi, or you see cell towers along the highways and stuff. And that's how I connect. And so if I'm going to a place where I can't assume that is there, then you're right. We have to be a little more clever about that. We may have to bring our own electricity with us, maybe solar panels or windmills or whatever. And we may have to create our own network from scratch if none exists. I don't even have to go to another country to see that. I can go out to rural America to farms. Those farmers can absolutely make good use of the data about, things like soil moisture and moisture on leaves and how much chemicals they need to apply. But gosh, a heck of a lot of those farms and ranches across America have like zero cellular coverage.
That's a good point.
And so in that case, I need to create a network for them to get, and all we're doing, I just need to get that data back to the farmhouse, back to the packing facility maybe, or whatever. Something like that.
Is it doable? I mean, is it doable? I mean, is the technology there to make it doable?
It absolutely is doable. You know what? Lots of technology has been around and making things doable for a long time. You know how they always, you maybe you've heard that quote that the future is already here. It's just distributed unequally. And a lot of the technology is available, but keep in mind, there's something that trumps all this stuff over and over again, and it's called economics. And if the equipment, the technology, the whatever costs too much money, these people just can't afford to buy it. You may promise this amazing outcome in the future, but if the upfront, that CapEx thing, if that's the model you're following, is a big hit, they're just like, I can't do it. I can't afford it. But yes, so how do I bring connectivity out to a farm? I can do it if connectivity is one part of the puzzle, right? It could be things like, some of this cellular technology, there's this narrowband technology. It's just do little small bites of data. A cell tower using that, you know, as we were, you know, it's part of 5G, but it also works with our existing systems too. It's an evolution. We've got cell towers, you know, with some Ericsson gear where we're able to beam data like 140 kilometers away from the cell tower. So if I don't have, because you know, back to economics, why are there no cell towers where there's no people or not very many people living? It's because it's economically unviable for the mobile operator to do it, right? They're not going to have enough subscribers to make it worth the cost. So, but if I can turn the volume up to 11 and beam the signal farther away from each cell tower, then maybe I can get more coverage. Other options, there's other network technologies, mesh technologies like with Bluetooth and other things where I can daisy chain, kind of hop my way to get to places with no coverage. There's technology called LoRaWAN, which is another low power technology where I could go buy a base station for not very much money. And LoRaWAN, you know, on the endpoints, on the things that I'm monitoring, and I can create my own network, and those things can have a range of 10 to 15 kilometers, and they're inexpensive. There's Sigfox, which is another technology that's similar. So there's absolutely ways to create something from nothing.
But once again, it gets down to the economics. It gets down to the ability for, let's say, when I look at Moab Foundation right over here on my other screen, because I'm looking over here, you have 16 squares, and these are sustainable development goals for the United Nations. And then I look at that, and granted, farming is a great example, remote, major benefits if they could get that data and greater yield, whatever it might be from a technology perspective.
Greater yield. Yeah.
But the economic capabilities of many of these countries are not even close. And you have to drive the technology or drive the solutions price point so low. Is that possible?
Here's at least where my head's at when I think about Moab. So it's IoT technology I invented. And it's the software part. I'm just going to give it to you. I'm going to give it to nonprofits. I'm going to give it to NGOs, whoever, who's going to help solve these societal problems. So the software is not going to cost you anything. But that's not the whole story, right? We still have hardware. You know, you've got some little computer, some compute that the software is running on. You've got the network. And so all those things also need to be economically viable. And so how do we solve that? I think you're either going to use lower cost compute resources. Like I use something like right now I've got on my desktop, I don't know if you've heard this little thing, it's called an Intel NUC, N-U-C. It's like a little square cube. It's only this big, it can run stuff that people understand. It can run Windows on it or something like that. And it's tiny and it doesn't use much power. Or I can go even smaller and use less power and have less compute, like maybe a Raspberry Pi or an Arduino or things like that. So there's that aspect to you. So you're trying to beat down the price on that. The network is a deal. But when we're trying to solve these big societal problems, I think there's no question that you're going to need companies to step up and potentially donate. You know, Moab is a nonprofit. And so we will, in the future, we'll do fundraising to be able to pay for that stuff. And then as you and I have talked about, none of this happens without people. And so in the end, I've got the software, maybe the hardware is donated or it's really cheap. I've got a network that's either there or it's created and it's really cheap, but I got to deploy it, got to get it running. And so I need people to implement these sustainable development goal, SDG solutions. And so I'm not saying that you're signing up for the Peace Corps or anything, but you may find yourself needing volunteers to go out to deploy these solutions in these locations to make it real. So it's a tall order. I know I try to simplify it. It's like I'm trying to give away as much as I can.
You did. I mean, that's That's a hell of a purpose. I love it. You have to have the people. I like the fact that we can donate, and that'd be great, and get the hardware. You got the code. You got all that stuff because you're just a tech guy that could do that tech stuff. And then you got the hardware, but you don't want to just ship it down someplace and let it sit in a warehouse. You got to have a viable application for it. And I noticed on this, on your website, moabfoundation.org, that everybody, and I've seen it, everybody talking about clean water. Everybody needs water. Water's it, man. And I've seen it. How can technology in that particular situation help?
Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, water is the basis of so much stuff, right?
Yeah.
Clean water, sanitation is like strategy number six. And so a billion people right now who don't have access or have horrible access to safe drinking water. And then sanitation goes hand in hand. I really recommend people, if they've got Netflix, Bill Gates did a good documentary. It was called Inside Bill's Brain. And it's like, it's only like six episodes, I think, but it starts off with this realization around the connection between drinking water and sanitation. When you start, you're like, why are so many people they're having diarrhea, all these problems, and kids are not surviving, and all these people are dying. What the heck's going on there? And then you go visit the place, and you go, oh, they're drinking out of the same place that they're going to the bathroom.
Yeah.
And it's not just an isolated thing. It's pervasive. So in that show, you see Bill kind of work with industry to literally create a toilet that could be deployed out there and that can also do what in other countries you might have a sewage system, you have water treatment facilities. How do I get a portable water treatment facility out to a village somewhere where they have this problem and I'm trying to prevent people from dying? IoT, they're doing the real hard stuff, and there are people who are going to do that stuff. You know, when I'm looking at these sustainable development goals, I'm like, well, what am I good at and what can I do? I'm not here to boil the ocean. I'm just going to focus on what I'm good at and how I can contribute. And so I know this mobile stuff and this IoT stuff and connectivity, and I think I can put some of that stuff together. Because remember, IoT is just measuring. I'm just measuring. That's it. I'm just knowing something. And then I'm going to take action on that knowledge. That's it.
Yep.
So I can do water quality monitoring, right? I can detect those biological microorganisms that are going to make you sick that's present in that, or chemicals. So whether this is a sanitation and clean water deal because of the scenario I'm talking about, whether it's a factory or a plant that's overtly or inadvertently dumping chemical thing into a river, whatever it happens to be, I'm going to use IoT to detect that. And so I can say, hey, don't drink that water. You know, I mean, I know it sounds really simple, but it needs to start simple.
See, here's to your point. And when I see, when you talk about this documentary, Bill Gates Inside His Brain and all that fine stuff, there's six things. What frustrates me is that it has to happen yesterday, right? There's a sense of urgency. It's not as if this stuff doesn't exist and you can deploy it. But are we going to have this conversation? This is what always frustrates me. Are we going to have this conversation 10 years from now and saying, it's the same thing, and we're not going to do anything? That pisses me off.
That pisses me off too. There's always that danger. Because you know what? I'm not, the stuff I'm talking about, it's not like some giant revelation. It's information that's out there to do the search. There's no shortage of smart people or talking heads on TV shows or on this podcast right now that are saying, yes, we should do this, 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 and this. People need to take action and get off their butts and actually go do the thing. Or we will be talking about this 10 years from now. And so I'm trying to do the thing by contributing and saying, I'm going to talk about it. These 17 sustainable development goals, if nothing else, they're just helping categorize things for me to make it easier. And then I can go, okay, for this one, this is how IoT or digital technologies or connectivity, they may apply, but it won't work for everything. And then I'm going to write them out, and then we're going to say, here are the steps to do the thing. And then I need people to go do the thing, and I'm going to give as much as I can.
Yeah.
But you're right. We got to go do the thing.
It is always execution. It always gets down to that. And the concern that I have, right, we're in this next normal, whatever this COVID world we live in right now. And there's been a two-finger death punch on many companies who might have been able to say, yeah, here's some money. I'll shell it out to you guys. That'd be great. But now it just reaffirms the fact that technology allows really tremendous economic value. And if you can do it, and if you can execute, and you can get it going, and do it incrementally. So it's like, we got to change the world in that sense. Let's leverage technology. That's fine. We can have that conversation, but can we just start here?
Yeah.
Can we just prove it out and keep it going? Right. There's the doing and then keeping it going.
Absolutely. And you hear this all the time, small. Just do one baby step, have one small win, and then go do that next small win. Instead of, everyone thinks if I'm not knocking out of the park, then, you know, I haven't succeeded. You know, it's another thing about water too, is we also have our own technology, our own infrastructure is working against us. And what I mean by that is, there's some great information out there. Just so in the U.S. alone, 6 billion gallons of fresh water is lost every day in America.
Ho, 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 ho. That's six with a B.
Six with a B every day. Just in the U.S. alone, worldwide, it could be trillions for all I know. I've researched this. I have friends who work at a great pump company in Denmark called Grundfos, and they talk about this too. You can imagine the frustration of working so hard to get that fresh, clean water to people. But at the same time, there's some bad guy on the other side who's causing you to lose it all every day. And there's not, and again, I don't want to be some guy full of facts here. But as far, we think, 70% of the world is made of water, but it turns out only 3% of the water on the planet is actually fresh water that we can drink. And so, that kind of puts it in perspective for you. And of that fresh water, we use 70% of that for agriculture, for irrigation. And so that leaves 30% for everything else we're going to use water for, including drinking, showers, cooling systems, buildings, whatever.
Right.
And if we find out that we're losing 6 billion gallons a day, that really sucks. And so how can I use IoT to help me with that problem? Well, it's just a real simple thing. It's called leak detection. There's leak detection thing. And this, again, I'm a big fan. Over time, you'll probably go, wow, Rob's more of like a Forrest Gump of IoT than anything else. I really look for the dumb, easy, simple solutions. I'm not interested. If it requires some kind of crazy machine learning or blockchain or AI, I'm not interested, because real people don't have time for that nonsense. We need to solve these problems with simple things that people can understand. And so how simple is leak detection? I'm detecting that this pipe under the city or in your house or in the skyscraper is leaking water. That's a simple sensor. And then I'm going to remotely alert you to the fact. That's it. Oh, there's leaking in this pipe in this house. People don't realize under every city, it's a giant matrix of pipes and sewage systems. It's giant, elaborate. Yeah. So it's two steps. Find the leak, fix the leak, upgrade the infrastructure, right?
Yeah.
I know that costs money. You can do targeted things, leak patches. Gosh, I remember having to learn how to patch a leak on a pipe when I was on the submarine. I remember doing flooding drills on the sub.
Everybody's seen that. I've watched it on Netflix. I know how terrible it is. You get wet.
You do get wet. You know what people don't realize is it's a different kind of wet that you get if you're patching a leak on a submarine, because the water is icy cold out there in the ocean. And so you're freezing to death. And they'd also be surprised to know that you might patch a lot of leaks with rope, of all things.
I use that as a way of being able to seal it up. I got it.
You just start wrapping rope over the pipe and get to the ceiling. Who knew?
Who knew? Well, the military does. The Navy does.
Yeah. We learn all kinds of stuff, right? But anyway, let's do this low-hanging fruit stuff. Let's do leak detection in your house, in the cities, in the sewer systems, in skyscrapers. And then let's go fix those leaks.
That's brilliant. You just got to do it. I don't want to have this damn conversation with you, next year and say, well, Rob, how's the Moab Foundation going?
Well, as it turns out, nobody showed up.
I've got free code out there still.
Yeah. Didn't help anything because nobody showed up. Because that's the other part. I always tell my old tagline with IoT, I was like, it's connect, collect, analyze, and act. So I connect to the thing, my leak detection sensor. I collect the data about it. It's telling me, hey, it's leaking.
Right.
I'm analyzing it. Well, in this case, the analyzing is really simple. It's leaking or it's not leaking. Rocket science. Woo! And then act. What's the action I'm going to take? Is a machine going to take an action? Is an electronic system going to take an action? Is a person going to take an action? The action might be send a message to dispatch a repair person to go fix the leak.
Right.
It's just like when you probably are interviewing people and you're talking about industrial IoT. They're trying to do predictive maintenance or at least catch things early. And so they find out that by some weird vibration in some machine at a factory that, oh boy, whenever we feel that vibration, that means in 4 days, this part's going to fail. So my IoT detected the vibration. I said, oh, that's what it is. And then I'm going to send a message. Maybe I'm going to put a message into a dispatch system software like SAP or ServiceNow or whatever it happens to be that's going to send a page. Do people still have pagers? Oh, I'm so old. Anyway, it's gonna message some guy that says, hey, go fix this thing before it fails. And that's the magic of IoT. Yeah, it's gonna call.
Just send it here. Just send it to the iPhone here.
There you go. Send him a text.
You don't have to page it. Text it.
Yeah. I don't know what I was thinking there.
I don't know, but he was showing your age. Were you playing a record when you were thinking through that?
Yeah, I was. And I was
One of the things I want to really point out, and it's I like all of this. I like where it's going. I like what you're saying, and to be able to take action and do it. But with simplicity, and if you focus on simplicity, there's a market for sophistication. It's over here. It's all good. Fine. Do that. But the majority of us, including me, I want simple, and I like that. But two, simplicity gives me the ability to sustain it. I don't have to sit there and go, son of a gun, that thing, I don't know how to fix it, and I don't know who to contact. And you don't want that, because then it just falls apart. You want it simple.
Absolutely. It's always got to be simple. And that's a problem in the IoT industry. Why haven't things always taken off in different areas?
Yeah.
I don't want to sit here and bash people here in Seattle or in Silicon Valley who may never set foot in a factory for all I know. But people like to show how smart they are and they're building super complex systems and doing rocket science stuff. And then they take it to someone who's not in the technology business. They are working in Tulsa, Oklahoma. They're in St. Louis, Missouri. They're in Omaha, Nebraska, and they've got a job to do. And they don't want some guy from Palo Alto telling them about how they're going to need blockchain and some AI in order to fix their problem. It needs to be simple so that it's understandable to everyone. Yeah. And to your point, simple makes it sustainable.
It just does.
Yeah.
and I'm telling you, I'm not pursuing solutions that are difficult. Whenever I have a problem, I naturally gravitate to the easy solution.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I think that's the human condition. And to your point, one of the things that I've and kudos to you, and I don't mean to blow smoke up your skirt, but kudos, is is the fact that I think the IoT, the digitization, and all that other stuff that goes along with Industry 4.0, they're drinking from the same, you know, trough, and they're learning and growing, and everything's cool, and they're talking about, you know, version 4.0 or 5 or 6 or 10, and I'm just, you know, Joe Sixpack, which I am, I'm just trying to figure out how to just sort of lube a berry.
Yeah.
And that's Greek to me. And I think that that's where some of the disconnect occurs, because yeah. I can't understand it.
No, absolutely. You know, the other thing too, so many people in IoT have focused on these horizontal platforms that is they position it like it's a Swiss Army knife. It's going to be everything to everyone. It's going to solve all your problems. Because as you know, there are literally hundreds, maybe thousands of IoT companies.
Yeah, yeah.
And most of the things they're selling are the same. They connect, they're getting data, they're storing the data, they're going to do some analytics, and then ding, here's your answer to your question or whatever, that kind of thing.
Right.
All that needs to be radically simplified. It needs to not be expensive. But also the app part of it. What is the actual solution that's going to be super helpful to you? Talking about Industry 4.0 or just some of these advanced scenarios, for instance, just for a moment. You know what? Living in the Seattle area over the years, it seems like once a year, and this will sound familiar to you, they do a news story on TV saying, uh-oh, you know, because Seattle is a big, for everything else that it is, it's got the largest manufacturer in America based here. It's called Boeing. They make airplanes.
It's a beast.
It's a beast. And it's the biggest building in the world. It's in Everett, Washington. And they always talk about, all these machinists, all these people who know how to build airplanes, they're nearing retirement. They're about to retire. And, we have this problem. We told every kid over the last 50 years to go to college, and no one knows how to build airplanes or how to weld things or turn things. Yeah. And this is on the news every year. And they feel like we're about to fall off a cliff and no one's going to know how to build aircraft anymore. And so an application of IoT is something like where you can, you know, you've probably heard these scenarios before where people got virtual reality goggles or something.
Oh, yeah.
And you're taking an apprentice who doesn't know what the heck they're doing, and you're going to walk them through the process of, hey, IoT, it's just a sensor. It's I've instrumented my machine, and it's telling me, hey, I've got some problems here, and I need to fix it. The next step is, well, tell me what I need to do. How do I fix it? Oh, here's the plan. Here's how you fix it. Now, it could be something like today, it could be on a clipboard, and I got my tools, and I go fix the thing. But if I don't know, or it could be a spreadsheet on a tablet. And in the future, it could be some apprentice with goggles on, and it's like he's playing that video game from a million years ago that was all text-based that says, open the door, pick up the key, look right. and it literally holds their hand and says, bring tools, walk down here, go to this machine, open this door, you know, and step by step walks them through, because there's no assumption they already know how to do the job yet. But I keep seeing this all the time.
But it's been going on forever, this silver tsunami. I mean, I was doing a project years ago, and they're talking about how are we going to get this knowledge out of these planners, because they're all going to retire, and pretty much everything will shut down. And yet here we are today. I guarantee you they're having the same conversation. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? This knowledge. Action. Action.
Yeah.
And do it, because you're absolutely spot on. All the company has to do is say, you can't retire. Well, I want to retire, but if you pay me some more money, I'll be able to stay on board. And, it's just, and they'll pay them more money.
Right.
And they'll stay on board. And then a year from now, they're going to say, what are we going to do about this?
Yeah. But what these companies need to do, some are doing it, and lots of community and junior colleges are doing it, is, hey, let's invest in doing the training to teach these kids how to do these jobs. And you know what? Who are the professors for these classes? It's these Silver Surfer guys. Yeah. They're going to teach it because nobody knows better. Not some slick professor. It's the guys who've been doing it for the last 50 years. They're going to go train these workforce, and they're going to write this stuff down so that we don't have this problem in the future.
Because I don't want to have the conversation again in all segments of industry and manufacturing. It's everywhere.
It is everywhere. You know what? It's even happening in the high tech industry.
Yeah.
We have you heard about the problem? All right. Do you remember Y2K?
It was the end of the world.
It was the end of the world.
And here we are talking about Y2K right now, and it's not the end of the world, but it happened.
And all of a sudden, they're like, we got to find all these retired mainframe COBOL programmers from the 60s. We need to change the dates from 2 digits to 4 digits. And so those guys made a lot of money, billable hours, trying to fix all that software for banks and whatever.
Right.
Well, guess what? It's a problem again today. I've read articles where, all right, people, be ready to be horrified. Here's your Uncle Rob ready to drop some knowledge on you. The global financial system, Wall Street, banks, insurance companies, it is all still running on mainframes and the same COBOL programs that were built forever ago. Still today. It hasn't been migrated to new computer systems with modern languages and modern technology. No, no, no. It's still running COBOL today. So there is a call out to try to find guys. I've read articles where they're like, they're paying these guys a fortune. I saw pictures of picking up some old guy in a limousine.
In a freaking wheelchair.
And he's got his oxygen tank and everything. Yes. And they're driving him in to work, and they're paying him a fortune because there's nobody. So it's the same problem, whether it's industrial stuff or, you know, because no one wants to upgrade anything and no one wants to teach it. You know, they're all, you know, because, you know, how we're so short-sighted, you know, American companies, we're just looking at the next quarter, right? So, you know, it's pervasive. But if you
hate it, there.
You make some money, go learn COBOL. It's not sexy, but you're going to get paid. Actually, with this COVID thing popping up, if you'll remember when they started having all the added the unemployment insurance and extra things like that, all of these different states' websites were all crashing and couldn't handle the load. Well, guess what? It's because hiding behind those modern websites were old mainframes and COBOL that actually is still running those systems for each state today. There were governors of different states calling out for help for people who know COBOL to come save them. So it's a thing. It's a thing.
Well, on that just chipper note, doggone it. Hey, so the walk away from this one is there's a lot of great opportunities to be able to use technology to transform the world, as well as use old technology to survive. So you were on both sides of the coin on that one.
Absolutely. You know, I used to, I here's my ambiguous thing I like to talk about. I have something I call the value needle, which, you know, people talk about moving the needle. I'm going to save 20% using IoT, or I'm going to make this, or I'm going to make paper. I just use this vague thing. I just call it the value needle. But tremendous. What I noticed, you know, especially I remember talking with my colleagues when I was at Hitachi building Lumada, the industrial IoT platform. We were just noticing, this isn't scientific, but that value needle, that first 10, 20, maybe 25% of value saving money came from really simple stuff. It came from just saying, it's stuff that manufacturers are doing already. It's threshold-based stuff. If temperature greater than 100, send a command to the machine to turn the motor down to 7,500 RPM from 10,000, whatever.
Right.
All that simple stuff. And so applying IoT to solutions, it turned out the simplest analytics gave us the quickest bang for the buck. And then when we started applying things like machine learning to machines, when we could get it to work, it was just incremental beyond that first hit. And so my recommendation to everyone is, and I feel like the technology industry is scaring customers because they keep saying IoT and AI in the same sentence. And people are thinking, I don't get value unless I'm using some crazy AI from the future or something from Isaac Asimov or something. And so what we need to do is the smart thing. Let's go for that low-hanging fruit. It feels like everyone's trying to skip over the easy stuff and move into the hard stuff.
Right.
That's not how you do it. If you're taking a test, you answer all the easy questions first, and then you go back to the hard ones.
Right.
Well, that's what we skipped in IoT, and it's time to get real and go back, and let's just do that easy stuff and call it a day and high five when we got that 10 or 20% savings in cost or increased uptime or whatever it is. Be happy with that instead of thinking you've got to boil the ocean and use some kind of blockchain, AI, deep learning, random forest neural network thing that allows you to pop a cold one at the end of the day.
But it's true. It's not just, it's not from a technology. There's always like, okay, take the low hanging fruit, get the greatest value. And then all the little incremental component, it's like where all the heavy lifting's current. And it's like, really? I got to do that? I'm done here. And I,
right.
You know, and like you said, you know, yes, let's all celebrate. Drink champagne. We did it.
We did it. Yeah. So do the easy stuff. And then also the whole Moab thing, the reason I did all this stuff is it's that same realization to help people, to help kids.
If you're out on the video, you get to see this, this computer. Yeah, forgot to pull it in, the prop.
Yeah, I got props. Remember the one laptop per child from the United Nations from a long time ago. Let's get laptops in the hands of these kids in these poorest countries. Boy, wouldn't that be important now? Education, nothing lifts people out of poverty like education. And how is education being delivered right now? It's being delivered over the internet. Just like you and I are doing right now through a lot of different apps. And my wife is a school teacher and she's teaching her kids virtually. And then they're recording videos and they're putting them on YouTube and you're watching pre-recorded stuff. Well, guess what? If we can get laptops in the hands of these kids, this happened a long time ago.
I think it's doable.
It's doable.
Look at you. You tip of the sword, Rob. That's what you are. You're the tip of the sword. The IoT sword.
Yes. Yes. Not the Trident 2 D5 ICBM sword that I used to be the tip of. So much less tritium. As people would say, right? Hey,
again, man, I've never heard that in a sentence. Maybe on some sort of action movie, maybe.
Maybe. We're gonna,
it sounds
we're
gonna fake. Tritium sounds fake. Is it
fake? Well, you know, you got to ignite those nukes somehow, right?
All right. Hey, are you active out there on LinkedIn?
I am.
Hell yeah.
A little bit.
All right.
I got Rob Tiffin,
what's that?
You get lots more engagement on LinkedIn than places like Twitter these days, I noticed. I don't know if you've noticed.
Yeah, I've always been a sort of a LinkedIn guy, and it's hard for me to sort of pare down my verbiage and be pithy for Twitter.
You're right.
It's hard.
You're right.
Yeah. It's like, because your subject, your topic, and what you were talking about requires more than 168 characters or whatever it might be.
Right. But we're going to make IoT simple. And it's going to be like you and me, like Forrest and Lieutenant Dan. And we're going to go solve the world's biggest problems in industry, in society, in the environment with simple solutions that people can understand. And we're going to make it economically viable. And we're going to get off our butts and go do it.
Action. And it's going to be sustainable because we're going to make it simple. And so they can sustain it and reap the benefits of simplicity.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. All right, listeners, that's Rob. He's a great guy. Rob, thank you very much for being on the Industrial Talk podcast. You're an absolute rock star. My skin is tingling.
Thank you so much.
That's creepy. But anyway, you listeners, you stay tuned. We're going to be right back.
You're listening to the Industrial Talk Podcast Network.
Holy cow. Two words, Rob Tiffany. Once again, VP, head of IoT strategies at Ericsson, and doggone, the founder of Moab Foundation. Go out to moabfoundation.org, find out more, get involved. I know I am. I'm pretty excited about my association with Rob and what he's doing with technology and impacting people's lives, impacting community. We've got to do this. That's our responsibility. Let's take action. And in light of that, I have the Industrial Academy. It is all wrapped around all of that stuff too as well. We're going to be pushing it on out the Moab Foundation, and hopefully, because you guys are just absolutely wonderful, begin to truly change the lives and leverage technology in such a way that we accomplish what we need to accomplish for these communities and these individuals. All right, again, it's because of Rob I get to collaborate. It's because of Rob I get to innovate with him. I just talk about it. He does all the work. And it's because of Rob we get to provide education opportunities for many. Incredible interview. Thank you very much. Once again, be bold, be brave, dare greatly. You've got to dare greatly. Push. We need you. We need you. We need you. Change the world. Never stop changing the world. We will be back with another great interview shortly.